It's hard to miss the growing popularity of flash technology these days, from the flash chips in our cell phones and our tablets, all the way to the SSDs for our laptops and in our server centers. And largely, we have to thank for this the growing bit density manufacturers have provided, which help bring down the costs and increase the density in our devices. Unfortunately, with this growing density, the average and worst-case performance is also in dramatic decline. But on the bright side, the best-case performance still exists in our high-density flash devices. So in this work, we extend existing algorithms to manage flash technology chips in order to tap into this best-case performance without hurting the wear out of the flash device or decreasing the device's capacity. Therefore, we provide both the speed of the hare while providing the endurance of the tortoise. I've done this work as my final paper for my PhD, and I'd like to thank my PhD advisor, Steven Swanson at UC San Diego, and my mentor, John Davis from Microsoft Research. Without them, I wouldn't have been able to do all this. So before we delve into the details of our design, let's start out with a brief look at the current state of flash management. The flash community has fairly well understood basics of how to manage this very idiosyncratic technology. We're able to handle both wear leveling and this large block erasure requirement that we'll see a bit later through a combination of address remapping and log structured writes to the actual flash technology. This is brought to our fingertips. The low power, high performance, and ruggedness and small form factor we've come to expect from our flash technology. It's helped improve our current technology, and it's also enabled brand new application realms. This is largely because, as I mentioned, the growing density of our flash technology. So as time has progressed, flash manufacturers have increased density through typical transistor scaling, but also through adding additional bits to each memory element in the technology. So when we started out, we had single bit technology, where we store only a single bit in each memory cell. And we've increased this up to 3 bits per cell on the market today. And in fact, manufacturers have demonstrated up to 6 bits per cell as recently as this spring. So we're increasing our density, but with this comes changes in performance as well. Here we have the write latency in milliseconds of these three different technologies. And as you can see, it's dramatically increasing. This write latency is going up quite a bit. If we delve into these average numbers a little bit more, we see a huge variation as we get into this multi-bit technology. In particular, the worst-case performance declines even further, the latency goes up. But at the same time, the best-case performance remains roughly unchanged. So you might imagine we have an SSD that isn't aware of these variations, then we could sporadically get these high latencies and these low latencies. But if our SSD is able to leverage this information, then we could still achieve these high-performing SSDs while we're also realizing these density increases. So ideally in this work, we'll be able to get the performance of that single-bit SLC cell with the density of these multi-bit technologies. So without further ado, let's get into the meat of the talk. We'll start out by looking at some background about the different patterns we've seen in the flash chips, its behavior, and how we can find those fast and slow areas, and how that behavior interacts with the well-established algorithms for managing the technology that typically show up in the, or implemented in the controller of the SSD. With that background behind us, we'll then get into the algorithms we've developed to help with several different workload characteristics. In particular, we'll start out by looking at bursty traffic, how we can handle this with fast and slow areas in a flash chip. And then we'll move on to look at handling sustained write load on our SSD. So behind the success of your SSDs is flash technology. In a thumb drive, you might have one or two flash chips. In an SSD, you might have maybe 64 flash chips. In each of these flash chips, it's composed of a set of blocks, and then each of these blocks is composed of a set of flash pages. Now, the sizes and numbers of these pages and blocks vary from chip to chip, but for every NAND flash chip, we must first erase an entire block before we can update any of the data on its pages. And indeed, when we go to write or program these pages, we have to do it in order from beginning to end within the block. So this is our basic Flash chip. We've got a number of these in our lab, a wide variety, in fact, that we test ourselves, figure out their behavior. We use this Xilinx educational development board. It gives us a 10 nanosecond resolution on all of our latency measurements, and it allows us to trade our Flash chips in and out so that we can study a wide variety of them. As I mentioned, we look at a wide variety of Flash chips. We draw from 6 different companies and dozens of models of Flash chips. We look at densities that have existed since the beginning of my PhD program, starting out at 72 nanometers and all the way down to 25 nanometers for the transistor size. And we look at all 3 of those cell densities that I mentioned earlier, SLC, MLC, and TLC. Now, we've collected a lot of data, but the key piece for this work has to do with the program latency as we get into multi-bit technology. Here we have the program time in microseconds, and we've divided the page's latency into 2 equally sized buckets. So on the left side, we have our SLC flash chips. On the right side, we have our MLC flash chips. And you can notice a very distinct difference between these technologies. SLC has very consistent latency, and these 2 buckets are virtually indistinguishable. However, when we get to MLC technology, then these 2 buckets have very different performance. The fast bucket is within about 30% of the SLC performance, whereas the slow bucket is about 4.5 times slower on average. What's more is that these 2 different buckets, the pages that go into these 2 different buckets, occur in a very regular pattern in every block on every manufacturer's chip. To be specific, this is an example block from one of these chips. The first 4 pages are fast, the last 4 are slow, and then every pair of pages in between alternate between fast and slow for writing to them. So this is great news. We have distinct buckets that we can work with. We have a consistent pattern where they show up. It's even easy to detect where these are by using read operations. And in fact, we've seen similar patterns extend all the way up into TLC. And the reason behind these performance differences give us reason to believe it will extend up through all multi-bit technology for Flash. The only problem is that accessing this alternating fast and slow page pattern, combining that with our management algorithms, isn't a very straightforward process. So let me show you what I mean. In order to manage the idiosyncrasies of Flash, dealing with the erase before the program and the where leveling, we use something called a Flash Translation Layer, or FTL. This is typically implemented in the controller of an SSD, and it looks something like this. First, we have our storage array of many Flash chips, and each of these Flash chips, of course, has a set of blocks. The FTL treats these very independently. So when writes come into the device, well, first, our blocks start out erased. And then as writes come into the device, maybe the SSD, then the FTL writes them in order from beginning to end of each block. When it gets to the end of a block, it moves on to a new block and starts again. So this data ends up, one more piece. The FTL must also maintain what we call a write point, pointing to the next erased page on each chip. Having one for each chip allows us to use all the chips independently and have them all working at the same time. So now, because we've written our data willy-nilly throughout the device, we could put them in arbitrary physical locations, the FTL must also maintain an address map, mapping from logical to physical address. So now bringing it down to a single write access. As it comes into the SSD, the FTL first chooses which write point it's going to put the data at. Then it writes the data to that erased page in the flash. It updates the physical location for the corresponding logical address of that piece of data. And then it advances the write point to the next erased page in that same block. So as data comes into the device, these blocks fill up. And as with any log-structured system, we must at some point go back and erase these blocks and free up new erased pages. We do this through garbage collection, of course, and it looks something like this. As our first chip is filling up now, and I've marked out some spots where invalid data has shown up. And at this point, we've reached our final block in this toy example. Basically, our erased pool of blocks is shrinking, so we have to pause and perform our garbage collection. So it's essentially a race internal to the device, and this is how it proceeds. The FTL must first choose a block. This is the victim block that we want to erase. This is a good candidate because most of the data on this block is invalidated. Once we've chosen the block, we then move the data that's still valid onto another block so that the block is now completely invalidated, and then we go and erase that entire block. So this is the basic garbage collection routine. There are two important things that we'll see again later that have to do specifically with these algorithms and our designs. We create additional write activity internal to the device, so there are writes going on inside the SSD that the user never sees. People refer to the effects of this as write amplification. Maybe you've heard that before. And the other piece is that we can't put off this garbage collection routine for too long. If we have a heavy load coming into our SSD, then at some point we're going to have to pause, devote some of these internal resources to maintain the erased state of the array. So this is the foundation, is one of these basic FTL routines that is common among SSDs. For our work, we're now layering in the added information that we saw a few slides ago about fast and slow pages. So now instead of just a single type of write point, we have fast write points and we have slow write points. So now our FTL is faced with the decision, do I want to use a fast write point? Do I want to use a slow write point? And so the driving question behind our research now is how do we leverage these distinct performance regions to our advantage? Maybe we want particular accesses to be fast. Maybe we want a net performance increase for the whole drive. We'll get into both of those scenarios next. So now we've seen our basics of our FTL behavior and our chip behavior. We'll first dive into our first property of workloads, and that is burstiness in our workloads traffic. So this is basically when you have a fixed size set of writes coming into your SSD followed by an idle period. So in a conventional FTL, we don't have information about fast and slow pages, so writes simply come into the block and the FTL schedules them to the next page. If we add the fast and slow page information in, then if we want to service a burst very quickly, we might simply write all the data to the fast pages and ignore those slow pages. And indeed, algorithms in the past have done this. Unfortunately, this temporarily halves the capacity of our array. We can't go back and use those slow pages without erasing the block. And it also ultimately increases the limited wear out on the device by twofold. So this is something we would like to avoid. So with our new algorithm for bursty traffic, we take a different approach. We have an internal type of write going on in addition to our user's writes. So our SSD begins pointing at a fast page, and we're able to absorb a burst using that fast page before the FTL moves on in its alternating pattern to a slow page. At this point, hopefully we've reached an idle period, and so we can perform garbage collection that the user doesn't see. We don't see the performance of that slow page, and we return the write point to a fast page by performing a move into that slow page. Now, this is a move we were going to do already, so we're not increasing the wear, and we're ideally doing it offline during that idle period. We call this algorithm return to fast because the goal is to return each write point to a fast page. So just to carry on with each burst, it's very cyclical. We absorb burst, we perform garbage collection. During the idle period, we absorb a burst and then perform garbage collection. So as with our design that we've seen, if we have one write point on each flash chip, we can absorb a burst size up to the number of flash chips that we have in our system. But ideally, we'd like to absorb an even larger burst. And in fact, we have the means to do this with one simple change. All we have to do is add additional write points on each flash chip. Now, normally we think of more write points as giving us a chance to do more work at the same time, but in this case, we're adding write points to increase the flexibility in our device. By adding write points, we're effectively simulating a pool of fast pages and a pool of slow pages. And the more write points we have, the closer we are to these distinct pools that we can choose from and maintain very independently. So we can apply these concepts now to a synthetic workload, or a set of synthetic workloads, in fact. Each one has a different burst size, and these bursts are isolated from each other with enough idle time to allow the system to return all of its write points to the fast pages in the system. We have our baseline design first, where we don't look at the fast and slow pages at all, and its performance roughly increases as the array becomes more fully utilized with the larger burst sizes. Then we have our all-fast design, which shoots up to a much higher plateau in performance where the SSD is fully utilized, and we're only using those fast pages while we're skipping over the slow pages. So this gap represents our performance opportunity with our return to fast policy. Ideally, we'd like that high plateau of performance while we achieve the wear out characteristics of the baseline algorithm. So if we layer in our first return to fast policy, this is just one write point on each flash chip, then we peak out at that fully utilized number before we quickly drop off. Now this is because we have the fast and slow pages alternating. Those write points return to the slow pages before and have to use those to service the remainder of the large bursts. But if we simply increase the number of write points on each flash chip, say to 2, then we can handle 2 times the size of burst because we're increasing the number of fast pages we have by 2-fold. And so on, as we double the number of write points, we double the maximum burst size that we can handle at high performance. So this is the trend we're looking at. The more write points we have in our system, the larger the burst we're able to sustain at high performance. And other information in these simulations show us that the wear out of these return to fast policies are on par with the baseline. So one final piece for our bursty traffic, we look at traces of real workloads and see how they perform. Here is that data. We have our baseline in orange on the left, all fast on the right. And we can see that for every workload, then adding more write points to each flash chip increases the performance from that baseline number towards that all fast number. In particular, the financial workload is very successful. It has very small bursts. And so indeed, just one write point on each flash chip, making the distinction between whether we're servicing a burst or during an idle period, allows us to achieve most of the performance benefit of the all-fast design. And you can refer to the paper for specific numbers, but the wear out of the return to fast policies on these benchmarks is roughly the same as the baseline. So this is how we've solved our burstiness in our workloads. But as our bursts get larger and larger, we're going to eventually reach a limit in the number of write points we can have in our system. So it'd be great if we could handle these larger bursts in an intelligent way as well. As they get larger and larger, then it's in fact moving towards a system where we have a sustained write load applied to our SSD. So this is the next application realm that we look at. When we have write accesses constantly hammering our SSD, then a good SSD is going to be using each and every one of its flash chips. This is a large set of flash chips, and some of them will be working to service external writes, and others will be working on garbage collection routines in order to maintain that pool of erased pages without plummeting and crashing where the user is going to see it. So as time goes on, each of these flash chips will flip between the different operations it will be servicing, but overall, we make sure our SSD fulfills the requirement of matching the rate of erased page production and erased page use. So with this in place, we can then move on and talk about the variability in the system. We're faced with the question, which type of page, fast or slow, do we want to use for the different types of writes that are going on in the system? Do we want to use fast pages for our external user writes so that they see really fast things? Or is it better to hold those back for garbage collection to achieve a net performance benefit? Well, to help answer this question, we explore two different configurations. First, we look at fast garbage collection, where we reserve all those fast pages for our garbage collection routines by preferring slow pages for our user writes. And then slow garbage collection, or SGC, is the exact opposite, where we allow those user writes to go to fast pages and send our garbage collection writes to slow pages. Now, it turns out that which of these is the better choice depends on how intensive the garbage collection routine turns out to be. For example, if a block is largely invalidated, the garbage collection routine is going to be fairly straightforward and not require a lot of moves. Whereas if there is a lot of valid data, then the garbage collection routine is going to take a lot of time. So as you might imagine, if we do use fast garbage collection, then as the garbage collection routine gets less intense towards the right of the graph, then it's going to be less important to apply those fast pages to garbage collection. Whereas if we have a system that has very few pages that it needs to move, very easy garbage collection routines, then the slow garbage collection is the way to go, because then we can apply those fast pages to the user writes and the garbage collection won't get in the way of those. There's one more piece that we should be considering when we have a heavily loaded SSD, and that is what chips are actually available when we go to write and access. When our SSD is heavily loaded and all the chips are in use, then when a new operation is scheduled, then chances are there will only be one flash chip available to service that write request. In this case, if we only have one write point on that flash chip, we only have one choice. So even if we wanted to schedule the access to a fast page, we wouldn't be able to. So our solution for this is very similar to with the bursty workloads. We just add more write points to the flash chip. And in this case, it gives us more choices when we go to schedule our operation. So we apply this concept and explore it a little bit with our synthetic workloads, our synthetic traces. As we increase the number of write points per flash chip, then the effects of the fast and slow garbage collection choices amplify up to the point where if we have 32 write points on each flash chip in this configuration, then we can see a 20% difference as opposed to almost no difference from the baseline. So our final piece now is how our traces perform under these new algorithms for sustained traffic. Here are our baseline and all fast performance. You'll notice that the gap here is much wider than with our bursty workloads, because in this scenario, we are using the slow pages online no matter what. In the baseline, of course, but in the all fast design, we don't use those at all. So for most of our workloads, the fast garbage collection routine turns out to be the best choice, roughly increasing as we increase the number of write points on each flash chip. I've segregated web index off to the right because it's kind of the black sheep in this scenario, and it doesn't perform very well with the fast garbage collection routine. It instead performs well with the slow garbage collection routine, and this is because the locality in web index's writes is very good, and so its garbage collection routines are not very intense. And as with the previous the design for the bursty workload, the wear out by using fast and slow garbage collection in this way is roughly on par with the baseline. So here we've seen two scenarios where we use our fast and slow pages to address certain properties within our workloads, all the way from one end of the spectrum of bursts in our workloads and up into sustained write traffic to the workloads. Just to conclude the talk, our piece of information from our flash chip behavior that we're able to leverage has its root in the number in multiple bits being stored in each memory cell. When we increase the density, we decrease the average performance of these cells, but the key piece here is that the fast performance still remains in those flash chips. We've seen the advantage of many write points in our system beyond just those that will allow us to fully utilize every flash chip. We're able to simulate pools of fast and slow pages that we use independently. And then finally, we've seen our different application realms and the mechanisms that allow us to achieve the performance of the hare and the endurance of the tortoise. So with that, I'd like to thank you for listening and take any questions you have.
Chris Small, this is really, really nice work.
Thank you.
Maybe you covered this and I missed it, but it seems really weird that there are fast pages and slow pages. Did you explain that, or do you know why this is?
I do know why it is. I didn't explain it. I actually have a backup slide, though, if you want to see more details. Basically,
it's just bizarre.
It is at the face of it, but it actually makes a lot of sense when you get into the way a flash memory cell works. Basically, on the left here, we have a flash memory cell. It's essentially a transistor with a floating gate. The floating gate, we inject electrons and remove electrons to adjust the threshold voltage or turn-on voltage of this transistor. The way the flash chip works, it's able to interpret this range of threshold voltages as a single bit by dividing it into two ranges, or two bits by dividing it into four, or so on up to three bits for eight ranges. And the piece here is that, okay, this next slide will help as well. When we have a two-bit MLC device, we're dividing it into four regions, but to program the first bit is very fast because you only have to program it into two buckets. And then when you come along for programming the second bit, then you have to be much more precise, so it takes a lot longer. And then manufacturers take these two bits and they group them into two separate pages. So now you have a page of slow bits and you have a page of fast bits. And with that, you have your fast and your slow pages.
Jeff? Jeff Canning, Harvey Wood College. You seem to have collected your own traces for this, is that right?
Yes, a long time ago. I wasn't involved, but.
Can I have them?
I think so. Are we? I'm looking to my advisor now. Come talk to me afterwards.
I will.
My name is Myung Soo. I love this idea. One of the concerns is that the wear out factor. So if I correctly understand your schemes, you try to the interleave the garbage collection task to with writing the fast page in an attempt to fill the slow page. So my question is that in the cases where we have some write intensive workload or need a fast page, we need to skip the slow pages about 50 or 60 or 70% on a MLC case or TLC case. So what if there is not enough data that RTF exploit? Could we still can use a fast phase without any wear out acceleration? I mean, that is my question.
So your question is, so in our designs for this paper, we don't do any page skipping, but could we conceivably do that and not have any adverse effects?
Yeah, I mean, so the main mechanism that you have is you would like to fill the valid data when have garbage collection to the slow page so that you can skip the such a slow page mm-hmm. to exploit the fast page, right? Mm-hmm. So in a TLC cases, there is a medium fast page and a very slow pages, which account for 70%. So if you would like to exploit a very fast page, then you have to skip the 70% pages by filling such kind of data, which means that you need a large amount of data related to the garbage collection. So what if there is no such kind of data related to the garbage collection?
Right. So there are certainly trade-offs involved. In order to fill those slow pages, you have to have enough garbage collection activity to fill those. And you can certainly get into the extreme where if you move into more and more bits and you only use the very fast pages for your user accesses, you could be performing too much garbage collection, you could overrun your idle time. And those are certainly all considerations you have to take into account when you look at your particular workload, your particular technology, and the amount of different pieces. With our particular setup, we found that we weren't doing excessively large amounts of garbage collection. We did have a piece where we allowed it to preemptively garbage collect. Basically, we'd had enough garbage collection, but we pulled in more moves, and those didn't hurt too terribly much. Okay. But certainly, as we move into more bits in each element, that ratio is going to change. And so we'll want to consider our workloads and say, these accesses need to be super fast, these could be a little bit slower. And really throughout all this work, I envision more of a spectrum to work with the operating system to say, these types of accesses are actually the ones that need to be fast, these need to be slow, so we can fill those different possibilities.
Okay, thank you.
Switch the laptop while taking the next question.
Yeah.
Gee, I was just going to refer to that slide, but that's okay. No, everyone remembers it. Norman Wilson, University of Toronto. So do I take it that if we go to 3 bits per cell, we end up with 3 different speeds?
Yes, we do.
So there's much more fun of this sort to be had in the future.
Oh, yes, there's lots coming. And it still does that alternating pattern.
How complex do the patterns go?
Or
does it
only TLC is actually out.
Uh-huh.
But they basically, they try to do the final slow touch-up as the last piece in a physical area.
Uh-huh.
So for 2-bit MLC, do fast, fast, slow, fast, slow, fast, slow. For TLC, you do fast, fast, medium, fast, medium, slow, fast, medium, slow. So you can kind of draw out a diagonal diagram for yourself to see the pattern and what they will probably do.
Neat, thank you.
Yeah.
So very fast question.
My name is Hanjun Kim, and I have a question about the write implication. Did you estimate the write implication about compared to baseline?
We looked at the additional wear out of the overall system. So we looked at the total number of erases for the same fixed amount of work. And all this data is in the paper if you're curious about the details. But in general, we found that all of our designs were roughly on par with the baseline, and the all-fast design was much more detrimental to the drive.
But I think...
I think we have to stop and take it offline. So thanks to Laura again.